You're listening to The Ground Floor on the Jefferson Exchange, where we talk with entrepreneurs from startup stage through stable and growing businesses. I'm your host, Cynthia Schur, and my guest today is Steve Rice, founder of Built to Buy and .com Jungle. As Steve said to me earlier, it's the story of a 25-year-old startup. Hmm. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Cynthia. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Your current company's part of a longer thread of entrepreneurial endeavors, as I understand it, in software. Tell us briefly how you got started and what led to what is now Built to Buy.
Well, I probably should start with the start of my technology path, which was really when I was about 25 years old, because I was an art major. I worked at the Ashland Outdoor Store. I'd been in the outdoor industry for many years, but Steve Rowe, who owned the Ashland Outdoor Store, was employee number 49 at Microsoft. And he retired, I think, at age 41 to move to Ashland to go fly fishing, which was all part of his Ashland Outdoor Store story. He recognized in me a capability around technology and then just started leveraging me to manage all of those pieces inside that business.
And then what led to a business for you?
Fast forward 7 years, I was working as a manager at Travel Essentials. It was 1999. The internet, even though it's still the Wild West, was very much the Wild West back then. And we knew we needed to build a system that we could manage our entire online presence rather than building product pages, which is essentially how stuff was built back then. So not knowing that it wasn't a good idea, we built our own content management system in 1999.
Oh, that's some timing for you.
and it worked really well. We had a couple of epiphanies that were business related and technology related. And by 2002, we were ranked number one for numerous very important keywords. For instance, if you looked us up at that time, we were number one for Eagle Creek, Royal Robins, Michelin guides, like really famous. And so we were kind of kicking, you know what, there. And a bunch of people started coming to us saying, how come the UPS truck and the USPS truck come to your door every day? And we told them about it. And so we spun off .com Jungle as a separate business in 2003.
Great. And then there's still a couple of decades there practically until you went to Built to Buy, right? Which is what you're doing now.
Yes.
So what led to Built to Buy and why is that? Because there's a huge evolution over those two decades in software. So what led to coming up to a solution for shipping?
The technological evolution really was a function of my own evolution as a leader and my own ability to manage people, which when I started .com Jungle, I was a pretty good manager of people, but didn't understand the relationship between technology and culture. And after building what was originally called Swing and Sarah, that was the thing we made, and deploying it and then understanding the challenges we were having, I very quickly realized that bad systems make everybody look bad and good systems make the good people look good and give you an opportunity to identify the people who could level up if you trained them and the ones who won't for whatever reason. From there, I ran very poorly the first version of .com Jungle because I had a bunch of employees. I was taking any particular client who had come my way. I was not very discriminating. And I think I managed the people fairly well, but I didn't manage our own systems. I made some decent money, but I didn't have a business that felt that great. Mm-hmm. And I had a very dear friend named Steven Sendar come in and say, look, you basically have a lot of really shallow relationships and you're a deep relationship kind of person. And you're underserving this community by saying yes to a bunch of customers who don't understand what your capabilities are because you don't really understand how good you are at stuff.
Huh. So were you doing custom product at that time, or were you doing something that you could roll out and sell as a, you know, off-the-shelf product?
Great question. At that time, I was doing custom websites for anybody who said yes.
Got it.
The Sendar pivot was to build custom integrated systems for larger companies who were sophisticated enough to understand how my skill set could benefit them. And he also helped me be sophisticated enough to understand how to choose the right kind of companies who could benefit from my skill set. So from about 2010 on, we pivoted from 225 customers to 25 customers. and also pivoted from maybe a 1 year average retention rate to a 14-year average retention rate.
No, that's a dramatic shift in your business model then.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in this particular industry, 3 years is considered a long time. And I've only met one other person who really had anything close to 5 years average client retention. So 14 is insane. And I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, great. So, but tell us though, if I wanted to go buy what you sell, who would I be and what would I be buying?
So we service small manufacturers and distributors, usually the 500,000 to 20 million. That's sort of our core, but we can also service people up to 50. But in that smaller range, you're basically looking for ordering systems for your own dealers and your own sales reps that don't make them mad. most ordering systems are basically, especially for wholesale, so let's say specifically for wholesale. Wholesale ordering systems are most often a retail ordering platform with some wholesale characteristics.
Okay.
And that's
so not
fine.
Really designed for what I'm doing.
Not really designed. They're designed usually for one thing. Like say I'm a dealer in Wisconsin and I want to buy widgets from a company in Ashland. Yes, I can go do that. And as the manufacturer in Ashland, I can apply discounts and give them special things and all of that stuff. What they don't also do is take care of the other stakeholders that are in the entire rest of your sales stack. So whether you're, you know, Pat Begonia, who sells plants in Ashland, or your Patagonia, your sales stack is the same. You have a sales manager. You have probably a sales director. You might have a sales team in-house. You might have an outside system of sales teams, sales reps. They might be agencies or individual people who are managed by the internal sales team. You have people who are taking phone orders. And, of course, the sales reps out in the field need to place orders. No one else pays attention to those things. They're kind of subsumed into the idea of an ERP, which is an enterprise resource planning tool, which usually sits on a machine inside a warehouse somewhere. But even that is not designed for those people either. They're tacked on the side.
So if I'm somebody and I'm in charge of supply chain and in charge of ordering, how do you make my life easier?
We eliminate almost all of the secondary data entry issues for every one of those stakeholders. We are the only truly stakeholder-based wholesale ordering platform in existence. And I've double-checked that with AI a couple times to make sure. So your dealers can actually get on and place orders, and they do it in under 45 seconds.
Great.
We're 75% faster than every other ERP
Okay, 75% faster.
75% faster than ERPs. You can't even calculate how fast we are for sales reps because ERP systems for sales reps are so horrible that they often don't do it. And they end up sending spreadsheets to an email address at that dealer who then has to have somebody doing data entry. All of that goes away.
Interesting solution.
Yeah, it's really neat and it's very rewarding to see because our customers have much higher customer retention rates because they don't have technology blocks for those people to do their jobs.
Got it. You're listening to The Ground Floor on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Cynthia Scherr and my guest today is Steve Rice, founder of .com Jungle and Built to Buy. So it sounds like you've described a little bit your ideal customer, but you have to get the people who are really your end user are not the people who are making the buying decisions.
For my product, that is correct, yeah.
And so how do you get to those folks?
Well, word of mouth has been very good for us. And one of the interesting challenges and opportunities for us is the people who do make the decision are often higher up in that food chain, but the department heads of every single department in those companies are usually the people clamoring for what we have. So we benefit from this because we end up often having one or two or even four champions inside a company before we even talk to the owner.
Cool.
And yeah, a lot of companies in my position don't have that benefit because those people are usually gatekeepers. Mm-hmm. And if we get a chance to talk to them, they actually turn into champions.
Interesting. So AI is pervasive now. It's going to be even more so. So how does the advent of AI affect your business or your product, given that there's a lot of, I'm not sure I'll get the technical term right, but AI can automatically do a lot of what ordering people who make place orders do. So how does that affect your business?
It has affected and will affect everything we do and everything that our customers do and everything that their customers do. There's no question it's happening. Mm-hmm. We're at a position where my entire company has been transformed in the last 3 months using AI. Our development process has gone from 6 months to release a widget to 7 to 10 days. The cost of development for us to bring a feature to our customers has gone from the ROI is insane. It's almost zero. And I think the opportunity for all of our customers is the opposite of what everyone who mostly thinks about AI thinks.
Say more.
Thanks for asking. So the fear of AI and the outward story of AI is that there's a ton of people that are going to lose their jobs. And I think that that's true. But for small manufacturers and small businesses who are already running with 3, 5, 15, 20 people, their problem isn't that they have too many people. It's that they have too much drudgery, and those people aren't as effective as they could be. And the promise of AI, the reality of AI, and I'm proving it every day in my own business, is that we can remove the drudgery so that we're giving people better tools that allow them to be better and work better and feel better about themselves. And it's been proven over and over again that if you give people the opportunity to succeed or even the option to like be lazy, they're going to choose success. And so to try and encapsulate that, for small businesses, this doesn't mean that the people you have, you need half of them. It means that the people you have are going to be so much better at their jobs when you incorporate this into your business model that you won't need lots of other people. You will still need people. You have to have, what do they call it, HIDDLE, human in the middle?
Human in the middle, yeah.
Human in the loop.
Mm-hmm.
But your humans in the loop will be so much better at doing what they're doing and will feel so much better about what they're doing that your business will be one that people want to work for, and it would also be one that people want to buy from.
Completely transforming your business in 3 months is something. So what are your growth plans in the future? If you have growth plans, some businesses want to stay the size they are.
Yeah, well, from a nuts and bolts monetary, built to buy is, even though we're 25 years old, the built to buy product is only several months old, and we do have 3 customers. Our plan is to have 50 within 18 months. It is a subscription model, so it's a software as subscription.
It's a SaaS.
It's easier to say than subscription.
Yeah.
It's a SaaS, and I need to take a pause, I guess, to talk about where we want to be. So from the nuts and bolts standpoint, we do want to add those customers. From a technological standpoint, my goal is to allow my own creativity and understanding of what people need and the feedback from our own customers directly to us through the systems we're building so that we can actually deliver better products to them within days or minutes.
So kind of an accelerated development path.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, I've developed an entire sales tool that looks a lot like all the famous ones people might know, like Salesforce and HubSpot. Yeah. And I have it set up so that when my own staff has meetings and talks about what works and what doesn't, it flows into my own AI team's workflow. They tell me about it. And then because I'm a technical architect and an artist by, how my brain works, I can implement it in a day.
Amazing. Yeah. So, we interview businesses in Southern Oregon here. Talk a little bit about, what do you like about running a business from Southern Oregon? And, is there anything that, if somebody else were starting a business here, you would say this is a great place to do business?
It is a great place to do business. And the number one reason it's a great place to do business is because it's a great place to live and raise family. Mm-hmm. Hands down. I can't tell you how many times my wife and I have been downtown at Scout or sitting at a restaurant in Medford and just say to herself, people are paying thousands of dollars to be here this weekend and we live right down the street.
Yeah, pretty great.
And that being an outdoor person, within 30 miles of here, all the best fly fishing and kayaking rivers and lakes. And, I do so many outdoor things. From a business community standpoint, the Rogue Valley has historically had one of the highest per capita tech business ratios in the United States. We actually won 2 Google Tech Community Awards. I can't remember the name of them in the last 15 years.
No kidding.
You have you can't see this radio, folks, but yeah. Cynthia has a surprised look on her face.
Yeah, I am surprised. Well, yeah. I'm glad your business is here, and thanks for talking to us about how the evolution to Built to Buy and what it does for your customers.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to The Ground Floor on the Jefferson Exchange. My name is Cynthia Scher, and you can find this and other episodes at jeffexchange.org and on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.